So please welcome Chris Noggle.
I know you've heard me say this a whole bunch of times, but you can never hear this too many times. These are some really important things that you need to learn, and not just learn, you need to apply these in your life. No one else is going to teach you this. You've got to start seeing the big picture. Good fortune's not going to just fall into your lap. I don't know if that's what you think is going to happen, but it isn't going to happen that way. You're going to have to work for it. You're going to have to do what everybody else is unwilling to do. You're going to have to grab it by its, you know what. You get what I'm talking about. You can learn from the wealthy just like I had to, but I'm going to save you a lot of time because I've put years and years into this, and I've failed enough times where you don't have to fail. You just got to listen to me. Are you paying attention? There's a specific reason the rich keep getting richer. They know something that you and I don't know, and that's what you need to know. Do you know what I mean? Scouty, are you listening to me? You know, I'm going to take that as a yes. Now, get up and go get us a beer.
You're gonna do just fine. Everybody loves orange hair. I should know. It looks great on camera. You won't mess up your lines. If you mess up your lines, Kyle will just tell you them. You practice all night for this. It's your time to shine. You can do it. I believe in you.
All right. I always like to start with a good laugh, so we make really funny videos, and if any of you have ever watched my YouTube channel, you will see some of them. We like to think we have a sense of humor. Other people say that was stupid, so you can be the judge of that. We're going to get into some things today, but primarily, we're going to get into how you can become your own bank. So every single one of you, I assume, are real estate investors. Do we have anyone in this room that is not a real estate investor? Raise your hand now. Okay, perfect. Good point, yes. So we have a few. What I'm going to show you is several things, but it's going to have a baseline in real estate. So tomorrow morning, I'm also speaking at 8:30, and that one's going to be more in-depth, covering things like debts and that. But here's the whole basis. We're going to show you how to take back control of your money by teaching you how to be the bank. Imagine if you had a way where every dollar you spent, okay, on all your debts right now, came back to you. Imagine every penny you spent on your car payments, your credit card payments, your lines of credit. Imagine if every one of those payments went into your account that you control. What would your life look like? Would it be different? I will tell you it would be. It'd be drastically different because you'd plug the holes in your boat. So getting into this, trying to figure out where I gotta hit this clicker. I'm gonna skip that video. Star Wars. All of you in this room, I would consider the 5%. The 5%ers in this country would match up with what Social Security says. Social Security says that only 5 out of 100 people will be financially secure at the age of retirement. Let that sink in. These are real statistics that only 5 out of 100 people are financially secure. Last time I checked, this is the United States of America, the land of the free and the land of opportunity. That's sickening that that's what it is. And a lot of that is because of what we've been taught about money. There's an interesting study that Earl Nightingale, anyone in here done the strangest secret in the world? So you'll remember this. There was a study done where they took 100 eager, optimistic 25-year-olds and they asked them that question. Are you going to be successful at the age of retirement? You already know the answer, right? Anyone in here in their 20s? I know you are, but I already know the answer. If I asked any of them if they're going to be successful, the answer is of course. Why would you even ask me that? But the statistics prove different. So Earl went out to try to figure out why is it that only 5 out of 100 people are going to hit that mark? And the answer came down to something that I wasn't expecting, and it was creation. Creation is the reason. Those 5 create their financial destiny. They create their dreams. And the other 95%, who in here can tell me what they did wrong? They worked for the other 5, but basically they conformed. They conformed to somebody else's failed reality, somebody else's failed dream, and somebody else's failed financial plan. That isn't you. You're the 5%. And I promise what I'm going to show you today and again tomorrow, which will be a different presentation, will get you on the track for finances to make sure that you are going to be the 5%. Now, a lot of you in here don't know who I am. So I'm just going to do a real quick, you know, just give you a little insight. I know you're here to learn something. I promise I will deliver on that. But I didn't grow up with money. Grew up in a lower middle class family. My mom did one thing right, as she did a lot of things right, but the best thing she did is she taught me to dream. And as a young child, one of the things I remember dreaming about is I wanted to be a professional snowboarder. Now, I live in Buffalo, New York. Anyone been there? If you haven't, I'd understand why, but some of you actually have. It's not exactly the mecca for professional snowboarders. We don't have mountains. It's not where pro snowboarders are bred, but I had a dream and I was gonna go for it. Now, everybody in my family, with the exception of mom, told me that can't happen. There's no way you're gonna become a pro snowboarder. I went out and did what everybody else told me I couldn't do, and I became a pro snowboarder. And it brought me to this one morning. I'm at the base of a mountain in New Hampshire. And I remember sitting out there, it's really early in the morning, it's one of those foggy, drizzly days. I heard the raindrops hitting my jacket, I felt it running down my goggles onto my face. But you see, this wasn't just a normal day. This day happened to be the very first professional snowboarding contest I was gonna ride in. So I wanted to be the first one on the lift. And in the distance, I remember hearing the roar of the lift fire up. And the next thing I know, I'm on that lift and I'm taking that ride up to this first contest. Everything was going perfect. I was filled with excitement, filled with joy. And I remember I come over this little knoll and I popped out of the fog. But right over to the left, I saw this thing. And that thing scared the crap out of me. I was no longer filled with excitement or joy. I was filled with fear. That thing was the largest jump I'd ever seen in my life. So big that I didn't even think that was possible that that could be the jump they were going to send us into. So I started thinking the rest of the way up, all right, well, at the top, I'm just going to lift my feet up, go over the little bar that stops the lift, and I'm going to ride back down. Nobody's going to miss me. I'm the new guy. But when I got to the top of the mountain, I put my board on the snow, and I just rode off right down to the starting ramp. And I remember standing at that ramp, staring down at this giant takeoff, thinking to myself, this can't be real. This can't be what we're doing. And I was just so engulfed in fear that all I remember is other riders showing up, but they weren't talking either. This was a Red Bull event, so it was a very small group of athletes riding in it. But nobody was talking, which is not norm. And at a contest like this, as an athlete, we always have to pick the one. Now, you probably don't know what the one is, but the one is the guinea pig that has to hit that jump first. So we always settled this the most diplomatic way we could in a game of Rochambeau. I learned an important lesson this day. I learned that rock does not beat paper. I was chosen as the one. So I remember sitting over at that edge. I had strapped my board on, and I'm just standing up there. Now, if I fall off, you guys get a good show, but we're just going to give this a whirl. I'm standing up there, and I'm staring down at this jump that I'm talking about, thinking to myself, oh, my God. Okay, if I go straight, I'm going to hit the jump, but then the fear kicks in. You think, all right, if I go straight, I'm going to carry too much speed. I'm going to shoot over the landing, and that'd be like falling 30 feet straight to the flats. So, okay, no, maybe that's not the choice. Maybe I do a couple speed checks, and as I take off the jump, then I'm thinking, oh, gosh, if I don't have enough speed, I'm going to slam into the backside. All these thoughts are going through my head, so much that I missed the starter telling me, go it will. But he was persistent and said it again. He said, we're waiting. So I sat there thinking, knees shaking, trembling in fear, what am I going to do? And just like every one of you would have done, you take a big breath, and you leap. And then all I heard is, that very moment is the sound of leaving the jump. But at that very moment, all the fear that was in me up to that point is now gone. It is completely erased from my mind and from my body. Now I'm filled with excitement. It's kind of like a bird getting kicked out of its nest. Does the bird fall to its death? No. Instinct kicks in. It flaps its wings and it starts to fly. Well, I was flying. I hit the landing. I rode away. But now all I could think about is getting back to the top to do this trick and that trip. Listen, you're here for nothing about snowboarding. You don't care about snowboarding, but the lesson in that is I had to leap just like all of you have had to leap. In every endeavor you've ever done, in every business decision you've ever made, you had to leap against the odds, against people telling you you should not or could not do that. What I'm going to show you is going to be 180 degrees different than everything you've ever learned about money, which is going to require you to take a leap. I don't want to call it a leap of faith because everything we do is based in mathematics. And unless you think math is a lie, then, well, this won't be a good exercise for you. But math does not lie. And that's what we're going to prove to you is how this works is all mathematics. I can't get this damn clicker to go. How many of you are business owners? Awesome. So you'll understand this. If any of you owned a restaurant, does anyone own a restaurant in here? No restaurant owners? But if you did, you would bring your friends to the restaurant, would you not? You'd bring your colleagues and your business people to your restaurant because you'd be proud of it. It's your dream. It's what you worked for. Same thing. If you owned a salon and you wanted to get your hair cut, would you go across the street to the neighbor's salon? Absolutely not. You'd always be in your salon. Gym. I know a lot of you work out. I know you guys are in the gym almost every day. When you go to a gym, do you ever see the owner, the proprietor of that gym, working out at Planet Fitness across the street? They're always in their gym, aren't they? All the time. Because that's their dream. Final question. If you owned a bank and the name, your name was the name of the bank, would you make deposits in your bank or would you make deposits in Bank of America across the street? Where? Your bank. Okay. If you owned a bank and you made deposits in your bank and you needed a car loan, would you take a loan from your bank or would you just go out and shop the cheapest rate? You'd of course take it from your bank. And if you took a loan from your bank, would you make payments back to your bank at the same rate or similar to what the competing banks charge? You would. You wouldn't be like, well, I own the bank, so I'm going to charge less. And would it even matter? Because every payment you made back to your bank is money that's yours. You got to use it the next day. I see all of you nodding. But I want you to really focus on what I just said, because I'm going to get into some stuff, and at the end, we're going to come back to what I just said, and I bet you some of you are not going to think the same way. So with that being said, this right here is your homework. That's right, it's a bike. It's a bike. Anyone that has paper, please write this down. It's called the Backward Bicycle. We're going to do a giveaway tomorrow morning, okay? It's going to be something really nice, and all you need to do is watch this video and tell me what you learned from the Backward Bicycle. I don't have time to play it today, but I want
Hey, it's me, Dest.
That's what it's going to sound like. That's what I want you to watch.
That was loud. Hey, it's me, Dest.
There we go. Will Rogers said this. He said, the biggest problem in America is not what people don't know. He said, the biggest problem in America is what people think they know that just ain't so. We go around the country and we teach this all over the place. Been doing this for a long time. We have 16,000 clients in this country. Look us up. The Money Multiplier, Chris Noggle, any of us. Try to find bad feedback. Try to find people saying, that's a scam. It doesn't work. You won't find it. 16,000 people are the proof that everything you're going to learn about being your own bank is something that will work for you. But I'm going to give some books away here. I've written several books, and one of them I wrote with Brent Kessler. Many of you know him here. I'm going to give some of these books away. But you've got to work for it. Fair enough? We're going to just ask some simple questions. First one, what is the definition of money? First person that says it gets a book. Who said that? Means of exchange. That's right. Money is nothing more than a means of exchange. Money for food, food for money. Money for car, car for money. Money for house, house for money. That's all it is. Let's go to the next one. Nobody ever seems to get this one right unless they've seen this. But what company in the world, we'll just make this really broad, what company in the world uses compound interest? Go. Banks. Anyone else have something other than banks? Mortgage companies? Insurance companies, credit card companies, funds. I'm still waiting for the right answer. Lenders. Wait, who said none? Hannah doesn't get the book. That's right, none. The answer is none because there's not a business in the world that uses compound interest. We are the ones that were taught to believe in compound interest. See, let's talk about banks. Banks don't use compound interest. They pay compound interest. Who can be my banker today? Can you be my banker?
Of course.
All right. So I'm going to make a deposit. What's your name? What's the name of the bank I'm depositing in?
This is Bank Tone.
Bank Tone. Okay. He's my banker. This is Bank Tone. Don't mess with him. He's got my money now. Bank Tone, what are you going to pay me on my money here?
I'll give you 2-3%.
Really? 2%? Not bad. Yeah. Very, very nice. Very nice. Okay. So now, Tone, tell me, what are you going to do with my money? Are you going to take my money and are you going to put it in the vault with a little in a box with my name on it?
I'm loaning it out.
You're going to loan it out to the guy behind you, right?
Yes, sir.
And what are you going to charge him?
About 18%.
18? You are something else. 18 or 19%, but he's paying me too. and lending it out at 18 or 19. You see, banks keep money in motion. They don't use compound interest. They charge us compound interest because he's going to charge him 18%. They pay us compound interest. But in order for us to earn compound interest, Tone, what must we do with our money for you to pay me compound interest?
I gotta put it to work.
Well, you got to just keep it, right?
Yeah.
So if I come back, Tone, and I take my money back out of your bank, how much are you paying me on my money now?
Nothing.
Right, nothing. That makes sense, doesn't it? It's how you all bank. So in other words, there's not a company that uses compound interest. Car dealerships, they don't. They move cars off the lot. Grocery stores move groceries off the grocery shelves. No business has money sitting stagnant except for us. How about this one? This one everybody should get right, so I'm going to run out of books. Come on, clicker. I might need some help with this clicker thing. There we go. Are your dollars worth more now or in the future?
Future?
Okay. All right, someone's correcting themselves. They're like, now. We just went through a really crazy inflationary period, so you can't tell me money's worth more in the future. We know money becomes weaker over time because of inflation. Our dollars are worth the most today. How many candy bars could you have bought for a dollar 20 years ago? The answer is more than you can today. That proves it's worth the most now. Taxes. This is a really fun one. Right in light of an election coming up, do you think taxes are going up or are they going down? Of course. So taxes are going up. The reason I ask those questions is simply because this one right here. How many of you have a 401k, 457, 403b, a qualified retirement plan? I'm going to alleviate any of you that have a self-directed IRA for right now and just talk about the rest that just have regular. I knew you were coming at me, so I had to cut that one out. Think about why. Well, actually, let me ask. Who had a 401k? Why did you put money into a 401k? Okay, to retire, and because the company gives you free money. What is that called?
A match,
right? Yeah, that match. Why else? Why else would you put money in a qualified retirement plan? Tax deductions. So every dollar you put in, that's money that goes in pre-tax, right? Or if you put it into an IRA, it's tax deductible. It comes right off your income. But let's just kind of go back to the things we talked about in the beginning. Okay, first off, you all told me that your dollars are worth the most today. But when you put money in a 401k or any qualified retirement plan, can you take that money today? No. Well, you could take loans, okay, up to $50,000 or 50%, all sorts of rules. But you got to wait 5, 10, 15 years until you're 59 and a half, and then you can take the money out. And when you take the money out, not from a Roth, when you take the money from a traditional, what must you pay on that money?
Taxes.
But you just told me taxes are going up. You're giving up your most valuable dollars today to take them back when they are weaker in the future and taxed at a higher rate. Please tell me where that makes sense. Now, I'm going to come back to yours. You're nodding your head no, but actually, you're getting free money. Remember that match? So let me give you an example. You go into a grocery store and you find yourself a nice Italian loaf of bread. You grab that thing, you pay for it, you come home, you put it in the freezer, you shut the door. But then you wait 5, 10, 15 years, you come back to that freezer, you open that door, there it is. You pull it out, you look at it, and you say, oh, that's going to be good. Would you eat that?
Nope.
Go right in the garbage because it'd be freezer burned. But wait, there's more. There's a second loaf of bread, freezer burned and stale, but that's your match. Again, the match can't be used until 59 and a half. It applies the same, but I agree. Keep putting your money in the 401k. The tax deductions, the matches are just ways to get us to give up control of our money today so somebody else can use it. I spent 16 years in Wall Street, 16 years. And I understand why we did it. I didn't want clients taking their money out. That meant I got paid less in fees. I didn't get into a couple other things, but I want to hit them real quick. So not only do we teach this around the country, but like I said, I was an advisor at a high level. I saw things in Wall Street I won't even repeat anymore, not because of fear of life, but because most people wouldn't believe me that that's how it works. It is a house of cards. In 2018, I was so fortunate that I got out of Wall Street because my wife and I, we were flipping a lot of houses. We did a pilot. We put together a pilot, and we got accepted by HGTV for a show. You all can look it up. It's called Risky Builders. 2018, we aired 6 times, we'll call it. But that dream also died because Discovery bought HGTV and shut that door. That's why I'm here. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing. Everything that happens in your life happens at exactly the right time for exactly the right reason. Do you think I thought that was the right reason at that time? When I got that call, that dreaded call from my producer saying, and I thought it was going to be, hey, we're going on to series, man. Get ready. Lowe's is going to be your sponsor, which we already had lined up. Everything's going to be good. But yet his tone was, I'm sorry to tell you this, but they're not moving on to series. Discovery has frozen all new shows. I just want you to understand that things in life won't always go the way you think they're going to go, but they're the right way that they should go. All right, let's keep going. Anyone else want the rest of these books? All right, what I'm going to do is I'm sort of just going to give them to the first folks. Here, pass those two down. Actually, make one more.
Do I keep
one? I got plenty more at the booth over there. Just come see us. Got to make sure I give them all away. All right, let's keep going. Who in here is buying a car this year? Anyone? Anyone buying a car at the end of the year? You are? Ma'am, can I pick on you a little bit? Can you be my... Yes, I sure can. Don't want to? What's your name? John. Okay. John is buying a new car. So, John, you're just going to play along. Okay, so how many different ways can you buy a car, folks? Let's go through them. Pay cash. I'll get you started. How else? Finance it. Lease it. What's the fourth way you can get a car? You can steal it. So now, John, we have identified four ways to buy a car. But in order to pay cash for a car, how are you buying your car, actually?
Lease.
Okay. Let's pretend today you're going to pay cash for it. So you come into the bank where you have been saving your money. Hopefully my clicker works from back here. Am I clicking this thing in the right place? There we go. All right. So you saved up to buy a $25,000 car, John. And you saved up at my bank, which is a really good bank, okay? We pay 4%. Don't go to his bank at 2%, just go to ours. So we pay you 4%. So we've identified that John has a really good bank paying him 4% on his money. John, you come into the bank and you say, hey, Chris, banker Chris, that is, you say, I would like to withdraw that $25,000 from the bank because I want to buy a car. And I immediately say to you, John, hold on a second, how about this? How about we make a loan to you for 6%, for about 60 months, doesn't matter the term, but for 6%, what do you say, John? No. That sound good? John's making 4, and I'm offering him a loan at 6. I mean, we all do this every single day. But does that sound like a good deal to John?
No.
But then I say to you, John, I say, John, hang on a second, bud. I'm going to make you a guarantee today. Our really good bank will pay you more on your $25,000 earning 4% than you will ever pay us on that loan at 6%. Am I lying to John? Right, yeah, because you guys are thinking, Chris, you have lost it. Have you been drinking? 6 minus 4 is what? -2. So, John, if you took that loan, you would be losing 2%. Are we right? But here's the thing where I mentioned math doesn't lie. This is where we're going to get into the math. Now, if we just take that $25,000 loan at 6%, we do the math, that's $483.32. That's how much his payment would be on the car. If we do that times the 60 months, he will pay $28,999 for the car. John, how much money do you think you're going to have in the really good bank earning 4% after 60 months? Do you think it's going to be more or less than you paid for the car? It is. Okay, more. You would be right, but a second ago you all said that's a bad deal. By the math, he would have $30,525 in that bank when he, well, basically that's $1,526 more than what he paid for the car. So is it true that you can make more earning 4 when you're paying 6? We just mathematically solved that, did we not? But who can tell me why? It's simple. One is compounding up, okay? So we got one going up, which is the 4%, but he's making payments on this $25,000 loan. So the balance is going down. So every time the balance goes down, he pays interest on a lower balance. Follow how that works? That is very important that you all understand that, because as we get into this, this is what we're really going to focus on. And I've only got, you know, an hour here and a clicker that doesn't like me. Damn thing. This is the most important thing you guys should learn when you come into a room like this. The clicker matters. All right, banks. If I'm going to teach you how to be the bank, you must understand how a bank works. So let's go through this. Tone, we already know how your bank works. I'm going to deposit $100,000, but you're going to give me a raise today. Fair enough?
Sure.
4% good?
Okay.
All right, he's going to pay me 4%. I deposit 100 grand in your bank for 4%. We've already identified Tone is not keeping my money in a safe. Okay, that vault has no money. So, Tone, you're going to lend that money out to somebody else for a mortgage. You're going to charge them 7%, which is more than what you're paying me.
Correct.
But you're lending my money to them.
Yes, sir.
Therefore, you're making what?
3%.
A spread.
So it
doesn't matter how much it is. You're making a spread. Is the spread good or bad? Good. Okay, so we already understand how that works, and you know how this is going to play out. The home is sold, okay, using the mortgage. The seller gets the money and does exactly what they were taught to do. Deposits the money back in the bank. Okay, Tone's got your money again. But Tone's going to lend that out to John, who wants to buy a car. Now, does everybody understand when you lease a car, it still goes through a finance company? And you still know you pay interest on that financing? A lot of people actually think there's no interest on a lease, but there is. So, but you buy the car, they charge you 8%, the car dealership gets the money, and what would you guess they do, Tone? Gives it back to you. Man, you got a good game going here. But then they loan it back out to somebody that needs a remodel loan. Anyone in here need some money for a remodel or for a real estate deal? Okay, I'm gonna come back. I'm sorry, what was your name again?
Bianca.
So Bianca needs some money, so Tone, you're gonna lend that to, yep. Tone, you're gonna lend it to Bianca at 9%. She's gonna pay the contractors. Sometimes they put the money back in the bank. Hint, hint. But the money goes in the bank, and then someone comes in for a debt consolidation loan, no collateral. So it's just a personal guarantee. So the bank issues that at 12%. So now you're starting to tick up that interest rate, but you're taking on more risk, Tone.
Yes,
credit cards get the money, put it back in the bank. Notice how the interest rate kept going higher. It's because the collateral was of lesser value or lesser importance. And then the credit card loan was the most because it was unsecured. Every bank operates this way, but now let's do the math. The bank paid you 4 and charged 7, so they made a spread of 3. And as we go down, I'm just going to put them all up here, then 4. Tone, you're liking this math, aren't you? 5. Sorry, my clicker is not performing. There we go. And there we go. 20%. Yep. You made 20, or the bank made 20, you made 4. Now, I'm going to, Hannah, you got my wallet, right? I got a fiver in there anywhere? If not, Joe will loan me $5. So I'm going to put $5 real money on the line. Okay, who can tell me right now in this room how much more did the bank make than the depositor in a percentage? Math is right on the screen. Just 16. Okay, keep going.
Infinite.
Come on. I heard 16. I'm short. I got to stand on things. That's it? Math's on the screen. How much more did the bank make than you? Who said 400? Getting close. We're not there. It's a percentage, yes. Who said that? What did you just say? 500. How did you come up with that? Well, it's simple. You made 4. The bank made a net spread of 20. So when you guys were doing 16, I liked the way you were doing it, but you forgot we already netted out the cost, which was the 4%. So the 4 divided into 20 is what?
Five.
You know that, it's 5. 500% more. The bank made 500% more than you did. And you know what? Take that right down to the science. There's a website called BauerFinancial.com. Write it down. You can look up any bank, any time frame, and you will find there's not a bank in this country that has paid less than 400 to 1,300% or made more than 1,300% more than you did. Now, what business do you want to be in? The banking business. That's all I'm trying to identify. So now we're going to get into it. So to be your own bank, what would be one thing you probably couldn't do if you wanted to be your own bank? Use their banks, right? How can you be your own bank if you use somebody else's bank to deposit your money? You can't. So many, many years ago, hundreds of years ago, there were some really smart folks named Rockefeller and Rothschild and the Morgans and the Stanleys. We all know those names. Back then, banks were not as strong as they were today, if you believe banks are strong today. But we'll just leave that one alone. So they wanted to create a banking system where they could store their wealth that was more secure. So they identified the most secure financial institution in the world. And what do you think that was then and is today? Giant, mutually owned, very important, life insurance companies. So the vehicle we are going to have to use to create our own banking system is nothing more than a dividend-paying whole life insurance policy from a mutually owned company. There we go. Okay. See, now I see a couple of people leaving, and this is usually what happens. Remember I mentioned Will Rogers. The biggest problem is not what people don't know, it's what they think they know that just ain't so. All of you in this room have some type of like idea of whole life insurance. Most of it is bad. Like Dave Ramsey telling you that's the worst place you could ever put your money. Or maybe Susie Orman is your flavor. She also says it's the worst place you can put your money. And so many other people would say that as well. But you see, we're not talking about regular off-the-shelf whole life. These contracts have to be designed and engineered to do what I'm about to show you. These are not normal off-the-shelf whole lives. I want you to be clear about that. But where this all comes from is BOLI, okay? Bank-owned life insurance. Banks are the number one purchasers of whole life insurance in the world, okay? And again, FDIC.gov, a website all of you should not know, don't ever get to know them. But if you look it up, this is old, of 2021, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, JP Morgan Chase, US Bank, and PNC Bank, all those banks have $75 billion in whole life, called BOLI, bank-owned life insurance. So if the banks are taking your money, 10% of it, the tier one capital, and putting it into whole life, why are they not telling you that you should put your money the same place as the bank? Go to any bank. Yeah, right. Go to any bank and ask them to put your money in the exact same place the bank puts their tier one capital. And I bet you no bank you ever go to, no bank advisor you ever talk to will tell you to put your money into specially designed and engineered whole life. I'm just trying to get you to start understanding what's really going on here. But these folks knew all about it. That is Walt Disney. Disneyland was started with a loan from a whole life insurance policy, actually a New York life insurance policy. Ray Kroc, you've probably seen the movie Founder. Remember the point where he's there talking about how McDonald's is not a burger joint. It is a real estate joint, which required some capital. Banks thought he was crazy. You're a burger joint. You're not in real estate. So what did he have to do? Be his own bank. He took a loan from his life insurance to start funding that, as well as the marketing campaign for Ronald McDonald. Where is that guy? Has anyone seen Ronald around lately? He's kind of gone now, isn't he? It's just sad. Sad how things change. Doris Christopher, okay, Pampered Chef, sold it to Warren Buffett for lots of money. Started that company with a loan from her life insurance. Listen, I'm just trying to show you the other people that are doing this, and the list goes on and on and on. But yet we're told it's the worst place you can put your money. And you know what? I kind of agree. If you put your money in regular whole life insurance, as a means to use it for banking or as a means to really grow the cash value, you probably made a mistake. But let's go into my friend Kevin. This is a real example, a real client. And I chose this one because it's relatively a smaller banking system. He was a young guy, 38 years old when we met him. Kevin came to us after seeing an event just like this. He wrote his name, number, and email down on a piece of paper, handed it to us, and said, can you help me? And if any of you told me, hey, can you help me? I would say, I have no clue. What am I helping you with? What problem am I solving for you today? Well, Kevin said, hey, listen, I've been saving this money up. I'm getting into real estate. I want to buy a piece of real estate that I'm going to rent out. And I saw what you were showing, and could I use this concept, this private banking, to do that? And I said, well, let's run the math. So what we identified is Kevin had about $100,000 in his bank account, but he took $50,000 of the money from his savings, because to do what I'm showing you, you're going to hate this, earmuffs, you have to change one thing, okay? That is it, and that is where your savings goes first, and then add one step. We're going to get to the step in a second. So we're changing one thing. That's what Kevin did. Kevin put $50,000 as a dump in one time. Took it out of his right pocket, put it into his left. The left just is called the whole life policy. And then we identified that he wanted to save roughly $500 a month, but we couldn't get it all in, so we were able to put $5,895 a year, or $491 every month, into his policy. There are IRS rules. The reason that's kind of an obscure number is because the IRS told Kevin, you can't do $500 a month. We won't allow it. But you can do $491.25. I'm not going to cover that today, but I'll get more into that tomorrow. It's called the MEC 7 pay rules. But it doesn't matter. So Kevin does this, puts $50,000 in. Who in here needs a loan? Bianca, you're up. How much you need, Bianca? Kevin's got $50,000. You need 50? Okay, 50 good, because that's all I got, man. Good? So, all right, so Kevin, immediately in the first 30 days after making the deposit, takes a loan from his private banking system and gives Bianca $50,000. Bianca, how much are you willing to pay on that $50,000? How much? 14, sounds great. Okay, Bianca's gonna pay 14% to Kevin for that loan. Let me ask all of you a question. If Kevin put 50 grand in $58.95, how much money did he have available to use immediately? $51,554. So you notice how that is not as much as he put in. It is less. This is very important. You see, there is a cost for the insurance portion, and that right there is reflected. But he takes 50 grand out and lends it to Bianca immediately at 14%, not four, and you immediately start paying him interest at 14% every month. Where is Kevin going to put that interest that she is paying him? She's not going to put it in Bank of America, right? She's going to put it in, or he's going to put it in his own banking system. So now we have taken 50 grand out as a loan. Bianca took that loan at 14%. The cost of that loan, because the insurance company does charge interest. Now, I'm going to kind of go a little in the weeds here, so if any of you don't like the weeds, you got to know this. When we took the $50,000 out of Kevin's account as a loan, how much money is left in Kevin's account after we take 50 grand out? Tell me.
50,000.
Yeah, so you guys are way smarter than I thought. 50,000. Actually, $51,554 is still in his policy, but we just gave you 50 grand. Where did that money come from? Well, lo and behold, a whole life insurance policy has a couple guarantees. Number one, a guaranteed interest rate. Okay, and in this policy, it was 3% plus dividend, got some close to 6%. But then he had a death benefit. So if he died, there'd be a death benefit paid out to his family. Now, I don't have that listed on here, but I'd assume for this kind of a thing would probably be about $500,000. The insurance company is glad to loan you part of your death benefit while you're living. Anytime you want. No applications, no credit checks, doesn't ding your credit, there's no loan on the books. Nobody even knows about it except for you, the insurance company, and now Bianca, because she's the one that just got the 50 grand. So what does that mean? Well, that means if this insurance company is paying me, let's just say 6% on my deposits, I'm still making 6. My cost of capital for this insurance company is about 5.2, but is it okay if I reduce down to 5 for simple math? If he's making 6, paying 5, what would that be? A spread. How did the bank, Tone, how did your bank make money? A spread, right. So he's able to do that, but he's still compounding on all of it. Now let's go to year two. Now not all policies are gonna look like this, but this is Kevin, so I'm gonna give this. Kevin, in the second year, puts $58.95 in the policy. Remember, $50,000 is already loaned out, earning 14%. So we're making money how many times now? Once, twice. Because the insurance company is still paying us interest on the full amount, plus now Bianca's paying us. We are making money twice on the same dollar. But hold on. Yeah, next year we put $58.95 in. By the math from the illustration, Kevin had access to $7,141. Tone, got to ask you a question, man. If I give you $58.95 in your bank,
okay,
that year, can I take $7,145 out?
That would be a big no.
But the insurance company can. Because that is the numbers. That means that year he made $1,246, which if you do the math, you take $1,246 and we divide it into the amount we deposited that year, that's a 21% cash on cash return. Folks, this is not trick math. This is just math. This is called a cash on cash return. Every financial advisor will always show you your returns every single year, cash on cash, or maybe they do cumulative. 401ks are always cumulative. You put X amount of dollars in, and over time, your return is X. But why would we not use cumulative returns in thinking about creating a banking system? Well, because when we put money in and take money out, we're still earning interest. So the only number that really matters is how much is my new money making when it goes in? And that is cash on cash. So folks, the numbers get better. Fifth year puts in $58.95, can take out $74. That's a 26% return. Now, let me ask you a question. Tone, you don't have to answer because you are the bank. If you made 21% on your money and you had to give the insurance company back 5, would anyone in here be mad? Seriously. Someone's got to be mad. Nobody in here wants to be mad. I knew it. You'd be mad. But if the insurance company paid you 26 and took back 5, would you be upset there? 54? You are greedy. 115? 191? He's right. He should be upset. So now the only way to mitigate that part that you're upset about it is lend it out to Bianca. Bianca needs 100. How many of you in here, I'm going to play a little exercise. This is off script. But how many of you in here are someone that fits on one side of the coin? And that is, who in here has money and you want that money to work for you? Raise your hand. Okay. Keep your hands up. All right. Put your hands down. Who in this room needs money to make more money right now? Some of the same hands. I love that. What I just did is I identified 100% of this room. Because there are only two types of people, those who have and those that need, and both have a problem. Because if you have money, your problem is you want to make more. And the other side of the coin, heads and tails, is if you need money, well, you need money to make more money. Therefore, the differentiator would be the edge of the coin, which is the third side. And I'm going to get into what that edge is, because right off the bat, here's how my brain works, being in finance as long as I have. I look at everybody in here that said they had money, they wanted to make more. And then when everybody else raised their hand and said they needed money, if I was the person that had my hand up, what would I be doing? I'd be identifying them. Can everybody who needs money real quick put your hand up again? Now that I've called it out, look around. If you have money, you should be looking. And you should be saying, hey, what is your opportunity? Great, I got a deal. It's a really good deal. Short-term flip. I need 50 or 100. I need 100 grand for my deal. How much are you willing to pay? How much are you charging is always the way you ask, right? Well, normally I charge 12% and 3 points. Well, I was thinking more like 13% flat. Deal. You okay with the first lien position? Yep. You okay personally guaranteeing the loan? Sure. Do you mind if I see a personal financial statement? Just want to make sure that if you're personally guaranteeing it, you have something to guarantee. All I just did is covered some of the bases that a bank would cover when they make a loan to you. All I'm asking you to do is reverse the order and do the same things by being the bank. Now, here, I'm gonna put a pin in that. I'm gonna come back to that in a second. I really wanna go there, but first we gotta talk cars. John, this the car you're buying? Her name is Eleanor, just so you know. Now, John, would you be more apt to buy Eleanor? And I'm sorry, John, what's your wife's name? Valerie? Valerie, would you be upset with John if he bought Eleanor? I think she goes probably $350,000, $400,000. Oh, hold on. But if John could get all the money back for buying that car, would you be as upset? No. I'm going to show you right now how to get all the money back for every single car you will ever buy, drive, and own, and this will never, ever not work. Is that worth your time today, even though you got lunch?
Yes.
Yeah? Does anyone not want to learn this? Because I can stop right here and go to the next thing. Okay, all right, let's get into it. So in order to do that, we got to come back to the machine. What was the machine that we're going to put our money in for our banking system? A specially designed and engineered whole life insurance policy. And remember when I was asking how you could buy a car? If you were going to pay cash, you would have to capitalize a bank account or capitalize a system to buy the car, correct? That's all we're going to do. So John's going to buy a car, not Eleanor today, sorry, John. But we're going to put $10,000 in premium deposits. I want you to notice how I just said that. Premium deposits. How you talk to yourself in dark, quiet rooms where no one's around matters, because your body and your mind doesn't know the difference. How many of you love making your car insurance premium payment? Anyone? Anyone like making any insurance payments? No? Okay, now, how many of you like making deposits into your bank? Every hand in here. Yeah, see, what's up? That's right. So, are we not capitalizing a banking system? But I can't tell you to just call them deposits because that would be against compliance. So it's premium deposits. Now that sounds better, doesn't it?
Yes.
Premium expense versus premium deposits. So we're making $10,000 premium deposits. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to do that for a period of 3 years. Now, know this. If for some reason while you're capitalizing your banking system, you needed access to the money, you always have access to it. Maybe not 100%, which is represented here. Now, I am giving you a terrible illustration and example here because this is about as bad as it could ever get. Put 10 in, take out 58 in the first year or any time that you need the money. Second year, you put 10 in, you got 20 and you have 12. Third year, you put 10 in, and now you have 29,204. Now, you all should know the answer to this. If John took the $25,000 out to buy the car, how much money does John have in his cash value earning interest and dividends? $29,402, okay? See how I keep repeating myself? And some of you are like, why do you keep saying the same thing? Because I'm trying to get you to remember what's really happening here. You are earning interest and dividends on $29,204, but you took $25,000 out to buy a car. Now, earlier, when I asked if you owned a bank and you took a loan from your bank, would you make payments back to your bank? What did you all say?
Yes.
So if this is your bank that you borrowed from to buy your car, well then darn it, you would make the same payment back to your bank that you would make to Tone's bank. Okay, so we're going to make $500 payments back to our bank. And here's the cool part. When you own your own banking system, You make the rules. Thou with the gold makes the rules. You call out the interest rate you want to pay, but here's how I do it. I love cars. I collect cars, and every car I ever buy, I ask the dealership, how much is the interest rate? And I go back and forth with them. It's like a charade, right? Anyone else play games with the finance managers? It's a fun game. You sit in the chair, you're buying a car, and you just go back and forth. What are you negotiating? The payment, which is derived from the interest rate. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Finally, they slide the paper over. You look at it like, I could do that, sweetie. What do you think? Good? Yeah. All right. Now you've got a deal. You're ready to buy the car. The finance manager or the salesperson slides a giant stack of papers over to you that is loan applications, and you say, oh. You slide it back to him and you say, I won't need this. Perfect way to piss him off. Did you know that salespeople at car dealerships make money on financing? I didn't until I actually did that. But anyway, I don't know where I was going with that. But you're going to make payments back to your bank. I'm just having some fun up here, that's all. So if we get into the math, remember all we did is we changed where our money's going first. We put it into a stupid whole life policy. We then took a loan against our death benefit for $25,000, which the insurance company collateralized the loan with your cash value, so they don't have any risk. And they charged you interest on your money at a rate of roughly 5%. But you're making more than 5 on it, so you don't matter. So that means over 7 years, we put $70,000 in premium what? Deposits. Okay. We then made $6,000 a year payments back to our bank. So that's 30 grand. We paid 30 grand for the car. So that's 100,000 bucks. But we also took 25 from it, which means we got 100 minus 25. I thought I had this thing going. There we go. So that means our net injection into our banking system is $75,000. Okay? We bought one car. The car is still in the driveway. We put in 75,000 net, and we have 67,000 in cash value. Which means we got 91 cents of every dollar back for the first car that we bought. John, do you know how to do that? You'd have to sell the car, right? That's the only way we'd ever get any money back for the car is we normally have to sell the car or trade the car in, but now the car's in your driveway and it has value. But you see, I didn't say I'd teach you how to get 91 cents of every dollar back. I said what? 100, all of it. But you never just buy one car. Because they get old, you bring them to the dealership, the tires are bad, the brakes are bad. Funny how that works. It's always about the fifth year. Right when your loan's almost paid off, that's when everything falls apart in the car. Isn't that strange? But there's a more important thing, and they made an air freshener. It's the new car smell. See, when you get in the new car, because yours is falling apart, or so they say, you buy it because it smells good. So we're going to do that. John, we're going to buy our second car, and we're going to do it the same exact way. We are going to take $25,000 from our banking system. We are going to make $500 a month payments back to our banking system. Therefore, the math is going to be very similar. But we're not going to make any premium deposits. Now, I would never suggest you do this, but for math and just for examples, I wanted to show this. No new premium deposits. Same $30,000 paid for the car. And we took $25,000 out, so we put $5,000 in over this 8 to 12-year period. But we got second car in the driveway. Now, if we looked at what we had in cash value in year 7, 67,881, and we subtract it from 91, that means we made 23,592. Any of you that are good at math, you're looking at it and say, no, which is right. You didn't make 23 grand. You put 75 net in for the first car, 5 in for the second car, which add those up is 80,000 bucks. You put 80,000 into your banking system. How much cash value is in your policy at that point? 91,473. So how much money did you make for buying two cars? $11,473. Let me just pause. Everybody did the math, right? Is anyone saying that the math is wrong? I've never had anybody say it was wrong. So you just found out how to get all the money back for every car you ever buy, drive, and own. So if I buy a third car, do you think the math looks better? Of course. Albert Einstein was a mathematician and just a brilliant man. Yeah, I think you're smarter than him. Just saying it. He's probably the smartest guy in the room. I'm being dead serious. But Albert Einstein said the most powerful thing in the financial world was compounding interest. He called it the eighth wonder of the world. The reason this works is not hocus pocus. It is simply mathematics called compounding interest, okay? All right, so now you did the car. Now let's go back and let's come back to that first example, actually first three rules. For this to work, it's simple. Pay yourself first, okay? Second, pay yourself with interest. Remember you said you wouldn't steal from your bank. So if you took a loan from your banking system, would you not pay the loan back or pay it back at 0% interest? No. Because if you kept all the money, why would it matter? That's what I'm trying to drive home. And then recycle and recapture your money. That's all you do. All right. Flow of money. This thing's really pissing me off. All right. Here we go. This is actually an example of mine. I want you to envision a circle. All I'm suggesting you do is you take and put money on the left side of the circle into the policy. You move it over to the right side, which in my case here, back, a decade ago, I had a line of credit with KeyBank, and KeyBank charged me 9% on that line of credit. I funded a policy. I had 23 grand in the policy, which was what I needed to pay the line of credit off. I took a loan from the policy. Back then, loan interest rates were 4. I got to change that. I paid off the line of credit. But did I stop there? No. I took the $289 a month that I used to give KeyBank. That was money that was already gone. I already paid KeyBank that. But now I don't owe KeyBank. I owe my bank. So I take the $289 and I put that money back into my policy as a loan repayment. Let me just ask you this question. This is the same for the car. If I put $289 back in the policy as a loan repayment, how much money do I have the next day? $289. You lost nothing. You didn't hemorrhage any money. You didn't give any money away. You plugged the holes in the boat. Folks, that's all I'm trying to show you. Now, that's just a line of credit that I did. But that's I'm going to cover tomorrow. But I do want to cover this cool little bugger here with cars. I showed you how to do the cars. But how many of you own companies again? Do you know that there's deductions for buying a corporate vehicle over 6,000 pounds? But forget about that. I'm not a CPA. But wouldn't it be cool, John, if your company leased the car that your bank financed? Your company or you are already going to get all the money back for the car. So you bought the car. Remember I showed you're going to get all the money back for it because of the way you did it. But now you don't want to make car payments, John. I don't blame you. Who wants to make car payments in here? So what you do is you lease the car to your company. I'm just going to stay over here, Tone. You're going to get to like me, really, because I can't move. You lease the car, and I've already run this by my attorney, but check with yours. You lease the car to your company. Your company then makes tax-deductible payments back to the same lease payment you would have paid the finance company, exact same dollars. So now your company is paying your policy back, your bank back. So you get all the money back, but your company gets the tax write-off. Now, some of you are figuring this out, and you're like, yeah, but that's taxable income to you. Get a new CPA, but yes, you're right. Okay? There we go. You want me to go back to that? Sorry. Some of you want photos of that. Oh man. Look at this. What is the manufacturer of this clicker? Sorry. It's all right. Give me a second to kind of catch up. I got a YouTube video. If any of you want, write down my name. It's Chris Noggle, and just put the in front of it. I got a YouTube channel where I did this full case study explaining how this works, so you can check that out. Is anyone in here a private lender? Okay, we got a bunch of private lenders. That's a fun game, right? When I was doing all the real estate for the show, I hated every minute of it. I hated flipping houses. It's a tough job, it really is, and it's transactional, so if you stop doing it, your income stops. So I had this really smart guy who ran a custodial company say to me, he said, the ultimate, Chris, in real estate is being the bank. I didn't quite know what that meant. When I sold my rental portfolio off and I had money and I wanted to be the bank, I realized there was another problem. Finding good borrowers is tough. How many times a year do they do this event? Once. So if you wanted to lend to good folks, you'd have to come to this event once a year, identify borrowers that fit your profile as a lender, and you'd do a deal with them here. Or you'd go to other RIAs and other meetups. That's a lot of work, a lot of time, right? Your time is the most precious thing you have. I realized this. When I wanted to lend money out, I remember I would go to people at RIAs and I would say, hey, is anyone looking for money? The whole room erupts. And what do they give you? A piece of paper with an address on it. And I'm like, what the hell's this? Well, that's the house I need to borrow. I need 100 grand for that house. You just gave me an address. Yeah, check it out. Look it up. Dude, I don't have time to do your work. So I started really struggling with this. So what I did is I said, there's got to be one place that exists where lenders and borrowers all are in the same place. And then I remember I was having a beer at a bar and I sat down with a napkin and I drew a circle and I said, there's two types of people with and people that need. Where is that place where the private lenders, because I didn't want institutions, I don't like banks. Where's that place where all the private lenders and all the deals are? Didn't exist, which I found strange. But when you find an opportunity to solve a really big problem for a lot of people, what do? You take it. I took it. And I created a company called PrivateMoneyClub.com. Write this down, PrivateMoneyClub.com. This is the first and only dating site for money. On that site today, there are over 8,000 members. 8,000 members, lenders and borrowers, and we have more lenders than we have borrowers right now, more private lenders. I want to preface, this is only private money, okay? And there's been hundreds of millions of dollars in deals that have happened. The largest one person that has raised is $70+ million, okay? ROI is the name of their company, and they've raised $70 million through Private Money Club. But what they also do is they lend, just like I lend and like some of you lend. How many of you thinks it makes sense if you were going to lend to start with your money in the policy and then lend the money out on privatemoneyclub.com and then get interest payments? Bianca's paying 14% if anyone wants to know, okay? Make monthly payments back to your policy. You make money twice on every dollar. And there's no risk in doing that on the policy side because it is guaranteed. So this is how I lend money, and we do a lot of this. But I urge all of you to check out Private Money Club. It's totally free. Had to be for regulators to allow it. So you can go on to Private Money Club, create a profile. You can be a lender or borrower. You can post your deal up on there, and we've got our brand new, fully redesigned site launching November 4th. It'll blow your mind. Anyone ever do bring a trailer, car auction site? It's good that none of you have. It's so addicting. You will own way too many cars, and your wife or husband will be pissed. Just ask my wife. Anyway, that's how we lend money. This is what, that's what it looks like. Okay, this is the old version, but it's kind of like Tinder. Some of you know what Tinder is. Swipe left, swipe right. But you're doing that for money or you're doing that for deals. Just swiping through the deals, found one you like, great, swipe right. Anyway, I'm elaborating. Here we go, back to Kevin's policy. Some people at this point like to see the numbers again. So 50K, he was putting 491 in, that's the math. Cash on cash. How many of you would want to lend using Kevin's bank if it were your own? Everybody. I mean, you're making 21 minus the 5 plus Bianca's 14. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. YouTube channel, this is a really old one. There's like 60,000 videos on there. There's one video that I do want to call out because my friend here watched it and said it's not for everybody, but it's how to design an IBC policy. There are two. There's the old one, and then there's the updated one. Check it out. That shows behind the scenes. Because to do a policy the way I just described, here's the thing I didn't tell you. It requires us to take a cut in our commission of between 60 and 90%. How do you think you have access to all that money up front immediately in the first 30 days? You think that's just magic? Your insurance agent, if you went to them, would probably tell you that's impossible. But it isn't. But it takes somebody giving for somebody else to get. We design the policy to reduce the death benefit, which reduces our commission, which gives you more cash to use. That's the secret. That video shows you how we design them. But with that being said, this is the UR code or QR code, whatever they call those darn things. If you are interested in booking a call, but more importantly, before anyone gets up, there was a packet that was handed out. Can I see yours? On the back of the packet, I don't know how I'm doing on time, but I do want to answer some questions. Am I good on time? 2 minutes? Oh, look at that. Holy crap. I'm getting pretty good at this. On the back of the packet, there is a form. Got Albert Einstein on it. It asks for your name, your phone number, and your email. If you want to talk to us about what you just saw, write your name, phone number, and email on that paper. Hand it to Hannah or Joseph here in the middle. Okay? Can't miss them. They're both standing and everybody else is sitting. And what we will do is book a call. But actually, what I'd prefer is after we get out of this room, meet us over at the booth and let's just get the call booked now. Here's the promise. I'm going to put $100 on the line. Anyone want $100?
Yeah.
Okay. $100. If you book a call with anyone on my team and they try to sell you something, like if you feel that icky feeling of being sold, my email is chris@themoneymultiplier.com. Email me that one, just give me their name, who tried to sell you something and you will get $100. Swear, I will pay every one of you. But we will not try to sell you anything because we don't have to. If we can solve your problem, you will ask us to help you do that. There's no sales needed. So when you book a call, just know there's not going to be any pushy salesperson. You're not going to be like sitting there having somebody try to sell you a life insurance policy. We are going to identify what your problem is, what it is you want to do, and we are going to build a solution and a strategy that solves your problem. All right, I got probably a minute and a half left. Questions? Yes, sir.
That interest that you're paying back into your system, does that count towards your MEC limit?
The interest that we're paying back to the insurance company, right? Does that count toward the MEC limit? No. The interest that we would be, that Bianca's paying me, putting that back in, what that could do is mech your policy. So you remember in those examples of the circle, but in the middle, there was this big green blob that said segregated bank account. You will get to a point where your interest, like all the money going back into the policy, hits a max. You can't put more in than you took out. So if you took 50 out, you can't put more than 50 plus the interest back in, but you will exceed that, especially if she pays you 14%. So what'll happen is that segregated account, which is a separate bank account, that's all it is, nothing fancy, go to your bank, open a second bank account, and all we do that for is books and records. Your CPA will thank you, and your tax preparer will thank you. Books and records, money in, money out. So what will happen is that will start to fill up because you can't put it all back in. But now let me ask a question. When you go down the street around here, and you see a Bank of America, how many blocks do you have to go before you see another Bank of America? Not many. Why do banks have so many branches? Because they need to raise more capital, and that's how they do it. Your banking system will never consist of just one policy. You will overfund it, and then you will have to go to a second one. Tomorrow, I'll cover that more in depth, but that's a great question. Yes, sir.
For the interest you're paying to your whole life insurance, hence you said that you designed the whole life policy. Do you have any word to say about the interest? Can you decide to pay like 0% while paying back to the whole life insurance?
Yeah, so basically the question is, you know, when you're deciding how much to pay your policy back, like in the car example for that one, you know, would you pay yourself back with 0% interest? Because that would make sense, right? Like, why pay back more? Well, let me ask you a question. If you paid yourself back at 6% and you got all the money in the account, would it make a difference if you paid 0 or 6%? It wouldn't. You're keeping all the money. But the answer to your question is you are in control. You could decide how much you want to pay your policy back, when you want to make your policy payments back. Matter of fact, things happen in life. You do this, you buy a car, and all of a sudden you hit some rough times. We'll be in a recession next year. We'll all know what rough times are. And when we do, I'm not kidding, When we do, you might find yourself in a position where you can't make that car payment. Now, that would be a problem if you did it through a finance company, right? Yes. Repo Joe would show up taking your car. But when you own the bank doing it, well, here's what you do. You find a mirror in your house. You go into the mirror, real sad face, like maybe cry a little before. You look in the mirror and you say, I'm so sorry. Things are tough. I can't make the payment. Can I just defer it for a couple months? And the person in the mirror will look back at you and will say, yeah, it's your bank. Why are you asking me? You make the rules. Questions? This is not universal whole life. There's no such thing. It's not, you're probably thinking of indexed universal life.
Yeah, something, because you say the whole life is not good.
No, whole life is the only vehicle we can use. You're talking about, there's all sorts of universal life policies which will not work the way I just showed this. And if anyone ever tells you an IUL, this is the biggest thing right now, tells you an IUL will do more than this, just do your research, please. IULs are like one of the biggest traps right now. I'm not saying they're bad vehicles, but for doing the infinite banking concept, what you learned, they do not work. Can I just leave it at that? And I'll hit that more tomorrow too. Okay? Any questions? Oh, 8:30 in the morning. But it's actually 9:30 because, you know, we roll our clocks back. So you get an hour's more sleep. So we'll see you guys at 8:30 tomorrow morning. Thank you, everybody.